Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for November 17, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis with Scott Butcher of the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. In agricultural news, China's government today announced food subsidies for poor families as it tries to cool inflation. We'll have that and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will have energy saving tips. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Here's how prices settled on this Wednesday afternoon in Chicago and Kansas City. In Kansas City, December wheat, $6.95 and a half, up $5.50. March, $7.01 and three quarters, up $5. May, $7.19, up $4.25. December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, $6.32, up $5.75. March, $6.72, up $7.25. May, $6.96, up $8.75. December corn, $5.25, down $1.50. March, $5.38 and a half, down $1.50. May, $5.45 and three quarters, down $0.25. July, $5.49 and three quarters, up $0.50. September, $5.19, up $4.50. January beans, $12.08, down $11.75. March, $12.13 and a half, down $13.50. May, $12.12, down $12.75. July, $12.12, down $12.25. December soybean meal, $3.28.70, down $1.10. December soybean oil, $48.98, down $0.99. Oats for December, $3.42 and a half, down $4. December live cattle, $99.35, up $90. November feeders, $112.20, up $5. And December lean hogs finished at $68.62 and a half, up $30 on the day. And those are Wednesday's settlements in Kansas City and in Chicago.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says weak weather disturbances will pass through the Midwest over the coming week with no heavy amounts of moisture expected. Temperatures will be cool Thursday with highs in the 20s and 30s in the northwest and the 40s and 50s in the southeast. No warming is likely in the northwest Friday into the weekend, while the lower and eastern Midwest will trend warmer with highs into the 50s and 60s during the weekend and early next week. But big cooling is likely in the northwestern Corn Belt late this weekend and early next week, with highs cooling to the teens and 20s in the northwest and the 40s and the 50s in the southeast. Low temperatures at night will fall off to sub-zero readings by this time next week in the northwestern Corn Belt. In contrast, lows in the 30s and 40s will occur in the Ohio River Valley.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon on this nice, beautiful, crisp, sunny afternoon.
Yeah, it's all of that outside, but it was kind of lackluster up at the board.
Yeah, every once in a while in the commodity world, we welcome a dull day, and on Wednesday afternoon, we're probably calling this a dull, kind of a tranquil day compared with some of the earlier and last week trade. The one, probably the big disappointment of the day is the soybean market closing a little lower, the crude oil being down 190, the continuation of talk of either an interest rate hike or worries about these price controls in China all weighed on the market. I think the interesting thing here is that I think as we go forward in time, we will see, a feeling that, the Chinese will continue to take soybeans from the U.S. Their soybean crush margins will continue to stay good to excellent. And we will see one thing that we haven't seen is, of course, these prices are a lot cheaper than they were 10 days or probably 30 days ago when it's all said and done.
So exporter and crusher demand remains fairly decent. Would it be fair to say of wheat, corn, and soybeans at the moment have the best fundamental outlook?
You know, I think the soybeans have an excellent outlook. You can even... probably a good debating team could argue corn close. The one thing that we'd like to see a little better in the corn arena is a little better export program. We know that the Brazilians have been selling corn at a very rapid pace. We do know that the Chinese have been rumored to make a deal with Argentina. The news basically talks about wine, beef, and soybean oil, but the private sources continue to indicate that the Chinese do need spring corn. But the big factor here is that it's a long time before we have other harvested new crop corn and soybeans come to the marketplace, and with the higher price levels in China, it still does equate for some pretty cheap commodities here, right here in the U.S.
You know, you look at new crop December corn, and you look at the charts, and I think even if you take Informa's numbers into account, I think there's probably some pretty good support for new crop corn, maybe no worse than 480, 490.
Yeah, the marketplace, before we see any major breaks, in my opinion, particularly in the new crop corn and soybeans, is that we do have to have a pretty darn good crop. We have to get some acreage out there and actually have a good crop around the world. Some of the private meteorologists still feel that we have to be very careful about Argentina and Brazil weather in the December-January time frame. And we'll have to sit back and wait. But the big factor here is that the market has been sold out of feed wheat and quickly selling out of feed corn, and the U.S. is still the most reliable and probably one of the cheapest markets in the world.
Are you anticipating new buying to come back into this market anytime soon?
Well, I think it depends on the next 10 days and how China handles this major problem. The best news that I can see is, of course, is thank goodness we have the Fed basically with this quantitative easing. I think that's kind of a big stabilizing influence about pumping more liquidity into the marketplace. The number two factor is it wouldn't surprise the marketplace probably to have a smaller final production estimate. And number three, the farmer basically has finished harvest, and the harvest and the crop's been put to bed. They seem to be pretty strong holders, but at the same time, there's not much left for them to sell in the third place.
I guess one of the things that I keep thinking about is how the European Union plays into this. It seems like every other month another country is having debt fears. And, of course, the one this week was Ireland.
That's so scary. And what's troubling is, Dave, when we think about Ireland, I don't think the gross domestic progress product, that was the word, probably wouldn't equal Missouri and Arkansas when it was all said and done. But they made a bunch of bad loans, and the two major banks in Ireland did some bad things, loaned a lot of money to, some shaky people. I think it's something in the area of $60 to $70 billion, which is a big pile of money. I think the real factor here, and your point's well taken, that it's troubling, and it doesn't take much news and jitters to change the relationships, and that's hard for a Central Illinois commodity trader that's been used to just focusing on U.S. Supply-demand and the U.S. dollar and the weather forecast. It's more international, and it is something that we're going to have to get used to watching international developments.
If you're a producer that still has unpriced corn in your bin, let's say you did price some earlier before the break, and you have unpriced still left, how long do you think you might have to hold on to it before we might see something along the prices we've had most recently?
I think it's something in the neighborhood of 35 to 60 days. And I think we can see prices come back in that point of time. And the factor here is that I think that if we just have some stability in the marketplace and actually some improvement as far as the U.S. economy, I think all those three things would add up to some better prices in the corn and soybean market.
Before we let you go, a comment about wheat, please.
Yeah. Wheat, kind of the stronger commodity in the marketplace, it got beat up pretty bad. The marketplace was extremely short wheat. The western one-third of Kansas was extremely dry. I don't think there was as much soft red winter wheat planted, and I would also echo that with the hard red winter wheat as well.
Thank you, Paul.
Have a nice day, Dave.
You too. That's Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services, and he is in Oakland, Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, China's government announced food subsidies for poor families today as it tries to cool a double-digit surge in prices that leaders worry might stir unrest. China's cabinet promised to ease shortages of vegetables and grain that helped push up food prices by more than 10% in October. It also promised more supplies of diesel to end fuel shortages that have disrupted trucking and industry. The jump in food prices, which has been blamed on summer storms that damaged crops, pushed inflation to a 25-month high of 4.4% in October, well above the government's 3% target. A report by a government think tank this month suggested inflation might be even higher than reported because official data fails to fully account for costs of services and housing. The leading U.S. chicken industry advocacy group yesterday released a new study that claims proposed federal rules to make livestock and poultry markets more competitive will cost the chicken industry more than $1 billion over 5 years. Early this summer, USDA's Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration proposed rules for livestock and poultry industries that would require, among other things, that meat plants keep written records explaining why they paid different prices for livestock or poultry. The National Chicken Council, which commissioned Tuesday's study, is opposed to GPSA's new rules. Its study claims that more than $1 billion in added costs would be due to reduced efficiencies, higher costs for feed and housing, and increased administration expenses. A far-reaching food safety bill that could give the government more power to prevent foodborne illnesses has become a target of advocates for buying food produced locally. They worry the legislation's safety requirements could force small farms out of business. The opposition of these locavores, advocates for buying food directly from farm or close to home, and owners of small farms, has become a sticking point in the Senate. While the bill is designed to give the Food and Drug Administration greater authority over the nation's food supply, opponents say it could bankrupt some small farms that don't have the means to comply with new standards. Those standards could include registering food safety plans with the FDA and documenting efforts to show food is not contaminated as it is produced. The European Council of Ministers says a legislative proposal that would give individual members of the European Union the right to ban the cultivation of genetically engineered crops based on reasons other than sound science is not likely to survive a challenge before the World Trade Organization. The opinion is crucial as many EU member states have been waiting for it before deciding whether to support the European Commission proposal, which was introduced in July. Industry backers say federal programs to promote cellulosic ethanol have not been able to get any commercial plants off the ground, and there is a risk that public support for the feedstock is waning. Industry professionals at a cellulosic biofuels conference in downtown Washington say few of the federal programs are working as expected. The biggest problem is a lack of investment in cellulosic projects, despite tax credits, loan guarantees, and the renewable fuels standard. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The experts at the University of Illinois are reminding homeowners that there are two ways to conserve energy: management and investment. Todd Gleason has more.
You can save money this winter on your home heating bill in a couple of different ways. University of Illinois Extension engineer Ted Funk says the adjustments fall into two categories: management and investment.
And the way I like to think of it is those two can be, you can work those together, but if, for instance, there are some small things that you can do in managing what you have. You've often heard about turning the thermostat down. The more you cut the inside temperature, you can cut your heating cost by a couple percent per degree that you turn everything down, turn the house thermostat down. So that's an example of management. And, of course, you can invest in a programmable thermostat so that you can turn the temperature down more when you leave the house. You can turn it down at night when you're asleep. Some people like to sleep in a cooler environment anyway, and then crank it back up when the family is active.
Another management example is calibrating the water heater. Funk says the dishwasher water temperature is the upper limit that should be considered.
You can, run water out of a hot water faucet and put a thermometer underneath it and check it. If you don't have a dishwasher, 120 degrees is probably plenty warm enough. But if you run your hot water heater at too high a setting, you're just losing through standby losses, especially if that water heater is sitting down in the garage or an unconditioned space. So that would be another example of managing what you have, and it doesn't really cost anything as far as out-of-pocket expense.
On the investment side, Funk says it's best to make sure the house is sufficiently insulated. For a large portion of the Midwest, he suggests attic insulation at the R38 level. That's about 12 inches of insulation. Sidewalls should be insulated, too. And for older homes, Funk says it's fairly inexpensive to top off the blown-in insulation that's likely settled already in the walls. Crawl spaces can be insulated as well. You must be careful here. If the crawl space is filled with water pipes, it's okay to insulate the outer walls, but not underneath the floorboards. You need the heat to keep the pipes from freezing. Whatever you do in the crawl space, though, Funk cautions it's necessary to have a vapor guard, 6mm plastic on the ground. Otherwise, there is a risk of moisture coming up out of the ground and creating an environment where molds and mildews can thrive. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey joining us now for a look with cash grain analysis is Tara Oliver of the Andersons out of Delphi, Indiana. Might say that we thank you for coming on board and filling in for Scott Butcher, who's away from his desk this afternoon.
Yeah, sorry. He was in a meeting, so you get me.
Well, we enjoy that very much. Why don't we start by asking you, how has demand in your area been for corn and beans?
Right now, I think we're not seeing an overwhelming amount of demand, but it is starting to kind of ratchet higher. With harvest, you know, we've seen some people bring in a lot of the stuff that normally would come in the deferred months has flowed a little bit sooner. But we also are seeing, you know, a lot of people who took things to the bins want to leave it there into some of the deferred months. So now there is demand to keep these processors running, especially with train shippers as well. We've seen the rail market get a little bit more competitive. So I think that shows the demand is on the rise.
So the rail market has become more competitive, even though, say, for the last 4 or 5 weeks, export demand for corn hasn't been very good.
Yeah, I mean, export demand has been pretty low in relation to where it has been previously. This week we saw some more global demand interest. The U.S. had made some sales to Egypt and South Korea, so there was a little bit more demand on a global aspect, which I think kind of in turn, you know, comes back to a domestic perspective and creates a little bit more of a higher demand as well.
Are you hearing that corn is coming out of Brazil?
No, we've heard mainly just that the U.S. has made sales to Egypt and South Korea, and China is looking to buy some corn from Argentina.
And what about on the ethanol side? How has demand been there for that?
I mean, ethanol margins have been, at a pretty good level, so I think the demand is higher. If there's good margins, people are taking advantage of that. We are seeing, you know, significant demands from some of the ethanol plants in the area, just, you know, wanting to keep their bins full through December so that they're in a comfortable position going into basically the deferred months out after the first of the year.
Do you anticipate that basis is going to firm for corn into the end of the year?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see it. We really are starting to see it now, and I think as we get into the end of the year, you know, people are chewing away at their inventory and what they have on the books. And with harvest being kind of in a shorter time frame, I think it may put people in a little bit more of a crunch towards the end of the year, whereas normally they are not used to that.
Do you have a lot of corn coming your way for spot delivery in January?
Right now, our position is pretty comfortable for January. I do think we will. It just, you know, right now, we haven't been able to get a good handle on the flow. It seems like things have dropped off a little bit lately with just a natural flow. But I think we'll see that pick up after the holidays. It's just difficult when we get into this time of the year.
And, Tara, what about your prices today?
Into climbers, we are going to be $5.30 for November and December, $5.29 for January, $5.36 for February, $5.41 for March, $5.43 for April, $5.46 for May, $5.45 for June, $5.48 for July, and $4.59 for next harvest.
Thank you very much. That's Tara Oliver of the Andersons, and she is out of Delphi, Indiana. In just 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at the agricultural weather. It's Homemade Bread Day. It's also a feast to St. Elizabeth of Hungary, patron of bakers. On this day in agricultural history in 1749, Nicholas Appert was born. Appert was a French cook and inventor who developed the method of preserving food that we call canning. He originally used glass jars sealed with wax and reinforced with wire. In 1865, William Burton was born. An American chemist, he devised the first thermal cracking process that more than doubled the proportion of gasoline yield from crude oil. His high heat, high pressure process saved more than 1 billion barrels of crude in its first 15 years of operation. In 1869, the Suez Canal opened, linking the Red Sea with the Mediterranean Sea. In 1988, Walmart opened its first supercenter in Wheeler, Oklahoma. It carried fresh meat, produce, dairy products, and baked goods, in addition to other standard supermarket products and discount store merchandise. And in 1996, the World Food Summit concluded. Delegates promised full efforts to ease world hunger. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I want to begin in South America and Brazil, where it looks like they're continuing to receive timely rains.
That is true. The majority of the country has favorable soil moisture today and will likely keep that through a big part of the next 10 days. The one exception will be Rio Grande do Sul, which is the southernmost state in the country, and that particular state will probably see some net drying. And about towards the end of next week, that state will probably be too dry. And we'll be talking about some moisture stress down there. But the rest of Brazil should be in pretty darn good shape, with most areas getting rain at one time or another and maintaining a pretty favorable outlook for crop development for a while.
Why has Rio Grande do Sul been missing its rain?
Well, it has to do with La Nina. La Nina traditionally reduces the rain in both Argentina and southern Brazil, including Uruguay and sometimes southern Paraguay, during the first half to middle part of the spring season. Now, as time goes forward, the typical response to La Nina is that this same region in southern Brazil will continue to be drier than usual, while the dryness in Argentina should become more focused on the eastern part of that country and Uruguay and southern Paraguay. So for the next few weeks, we'll probably see this evolution towards more noticeable dryness in far southern parts of Brazil while it rains frequently in the north.
I know that in parts of Argentina, planting is behind schedule because it's been too dry.
That's right. And the first part of spring has certainly lived up to its reputation with La Nina events, with well below average precipitation in a big part of Argentina in recent weeks. In fact, the first half of this month had less than 25% of normal precipitation for more than three-fourths of Argentina. But this is about to change. We are going to see showers and thunderstorms developing here probably tomorrow and continuing periodically into Monday. And many of these drier areas in the west will get at least some rain. I don't want to imply that the dryness is over, but there should be some relief there. And I think this is the tip of that iceberg where we shift things towards the eastern, shift the dryness towards eastern parts of Argentina, allowing for more routine showers to occur in the western areas.
So we're talking places like, what, northern Cordoba, western Santa Fe, that kind of thing?
Yes. Santiago del Estero has been the driest state in the country, actually driest province in the country this year up to this point in time, and they are desperately in need of rain, but so is northeastern parts of Cordoba and northwestern Santa Fe, and all three of these areas will see rain of some sorts over the next 5 days. I think we'll still need to see more, though.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a great afternoon.
That's meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can listen to this show again on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the Closing Market link. This is Dave Dickey.